This is the Bearcast, presented by Bird, Kulch & Ford. Bird, Kulch & Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoak and Grayson Grundhaver.
And welcome in, everybody, to the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com on this Tuesday, July the 30th. It is the start of fall practices this week, coming up on Thursday, the first official kickoff to the season for Baylor football. But recruiting has not stopped as the offseason has rolled along. And now the season getting underway, more commits to talk about, or one more commit to talk about for the class of 2026. We'll get into that. We'll get into the start of fall practice and a couple of other news and notes as well. But thank you for joining us as always, whether it's live Tuesdays at 11:15 on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page, or if it's after the fact on the podcast platforms or on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page. If you are joining us, however you're joining us on YouTube, please hit that like and subscribe button. If it's on a podcast platform, please hit those five stars and whatever else to boost our algorithm would be much appreciated as well. Especially that subscribe button, though, would be great. So, especially with all that we have in store this upcoming football season, you need to get all your ducks in a row, and that would be a good place to start. But I'm Craig Smoak, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver and Garrett Ross behind the scenes making everything happen. And we've got a lot to get into. Grayson, as I mentioned at the top, recruiting rolls along, as we'll dive into in just a moment. But the start of fall practices are actually here. It does not feel like fall. It won't for a while longer. But it is technically the kickoff to fall here in a couple of days, and the actual football season right around the corner.
Right. I mean, it's a really great time right now, because you kind of get this perfect collision of really good recruiting and then also fall camp coming up. So Baylor's actually, it just feels like they're in such a good spot right now. The vibes are really good around the program. Momentum's pretty strong. So I think in general, it's seeing if this recruiting, period can really lead into fall camp and, you know, provide even more, I guess, juice for the program heading into fall camp and the season.
Yeah, for a team who's got a head coach on the hot seat and is picked towards the bottom of the conference, they've got about as much momentum as you could possibly have hoped for somehow because of mostly recruiting, but also just some of the moves made this offseason. We'll get into a preview of sorts here in just a moment, but want to start off with a basketball note, because this just came down and we're going to be pretty much all football from here on out. So this makes sense to start off with and shine a little light on. Nikki Collin has signed a contract extension, that being officially announced by the school today. Mac Rhodes in a statement saying, "We are thrilled to announce the contract extension for Nikki Collin. Nikki has demonstrated an exceptional commitment to our student athletes and the Baylor family in her first 3 years with our women's basketball team. She's assembled a strong and talented staff that is doing an excellent job in the development of our athletes. Her leadership, vision, and dedication to excellence have significantly contributed to the continued success of our storied program." That is from the press release, and then it goes on to mention their records and what they've accomplished so far under her era, or her time as head coach. And a big year last year, a nice, I guess, kind of bounce back year in some ways. And here we go. I was not expecting anything necessarily, but Nikki Collin has signed a contract extension. Don't have any of the details outside of just the press release itself, but a lot of that, again, just kind of highlighting what she's done up to this point in her career. So what are your thoughts on Nikki Collin and a contract extension?
Last year was, I feel like, a big step for this program, just kind of getting back to having success in the tournament and really just trying to build on, you know, what was kind of a down year the year before, and just building and trying to get to a point where you're competing for Big 12 championships and national championships. And so clearly there is a vision in place right now that Mac Rhodes definitely believes in, that Nikki Collin believes in, the players believe in, and I think there's total buy-in in her program right now. So I think that's a great part about this. I'm a little surprised announced, that the extension was announced right now, you know, you kind of feel like, oh, maybe another year from now, see how they do next season. But I think in general, this is a bet on kind of what she's brought to the table up to this point and a bet on the future of the program. And under her guidance, I think there's optimism about where they're heading.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously there is a good feeling about where they are going and what that's going to continue to look like if you're going to make the commitment to, you know, announce this contract extension. So last year, a nice little run in the tournament. The year before, they were able to, you know, finish what the runner-up in the Big 12 championship was it the tournament or they won the Big 12 title. Was it the regular season?
That was with Nalissa. That was her first year.
Yeah, yeah. That was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, had that accomplishment in year number one. And then last year had a nice little run as well. And so here they are and just locking down and making sure that she's the name on the face of the program for the foreseeable future. So good for Nikki Collin and good for Baylor women's basketball to have that to you know, look forward to and to be able to promote as well. So there you go, a little bit of news off the top that was unexpected, but is certainly good news for Nikki Collin fans and fans of the women's basketball program. So 13th is what they finished last year in the AP, 26-8, the final record in the 2023-2024 season. So now looking to build off of that and see where they can take it. But, yeah, man, 24th Big 12 title in 2022. So she's got that under her belt, and I think that kind of gets lost. That's why I'm almost, like, talking about it. Like, did that happen? Because it's, like, oh, it's almost fogging my memory. Mm-hmm. But that was just 2 years ago. So, yeah, that's how it started. It just seems like that was so long ago already, but right. No, not that long ago.
I think it was more so just because I believe they were upset, yeah, by South Dakota that year.
Early.
So you kind of miss out on right advancing in the tournament,
and it definitely had a yeah the whole Mulkey transition, mm-hmm. and there's just a bad taste in people's mouths with that, and then you don't go deep in the tournament, and
right, and two yeah. straight second round exits right. in the tournament, and then this past year they really broke through, and honestly, you know, we talked about on the Bearcast. I mean, they had a great chance to beat USC in that Sweet 16 game. They were in that game. That was actually a really entertaining, really fun game. And it really just speaks to kind of, again, where this program is heading. They went on the road and beat Virginia Tech to advance to the Sweet 16. So I just feel like in general, there's a lot of positive vibes from this program. Went 12-6 in the Big 12 last year and have an opportunity, I think, coming into this year to really, I think, solidify themselves as the top title contender in the Big 12.
So there you go. Nikki Collin entering year number four with a fresh new contract to boot. And looking to build off of last year's regional semifinal appearance and take it even further. So there you go with that. And from here on out, it's going to be pretty much all football because that was a note that we weren't even expecting as we got ready to record. But glad to have it as a part of today's show. But other than that, the plan was and the plan is to talk football because that is the storyline right now. The start of fall practices, as we mentioned at the very top, and I guess decide to start off with a little bit of recruiting note, right? And go ahead and dive into that since that's more of the I guess, fresh news. And the big reason why fall camp is starting with such great momentum is not because of the season they had last year or even the last couple of years. It's been a tough couple of seasons for Dave Aranda and Baylor football, but they are on a heater right now in recruiting and able to add a new commit to the mix over the weekend for the class of 2026. So that is not who's going to sign this December and so on and so forth. It's the class that will sign two Decembers from mm-hmm. now. So the class of 2025 is what we've been mostly talking about, and that's who will start to sign in December. And while they did get some work done in that regard, this was also a big weekend, Grayson, to start building on 2026 as well. They already came into the weekend with one commit for 26, and South Lake Carroll running back Davis Penn, who committed a couple of weeks ago and got the class started. But now a second addition coming off of the VIB weekend that will dive further into, but Rylan Morris, a running back from Honey Grove, Texas, and Honey Grove High School, 5'9", 160-ish is kind of what he was listed at. So another running back is now commit number two for the class of 2026 as Rylan Morris joins Davis Penn. So I guess let's just start there and unpack this latest addition and what all it sort of means.
Right. So I guess the first place to start here is, you know, Rylan Morris is the seventh highest ranked commit Baylor's ever landed in its history. I mean, that is the kind of prospect we're talking about here. The offers, Oregon, Oklahoma, TCU, USC, Miami, SMU, lots of really good offers. I mean, this is a very, again, highly rated prospect, and he gives Keenan Hall the third consensus four-star running back he has landed since coming to the Baylor program. I believe Davis Penn is a four-star quality running back as well, but he's currently not ranked that way. But Rylan is, I mean, just a monster, and he plays at a smaller school, but he puts up massive numbers. I mean, he ran for over 1,700 yards and 32 touchdowns last year, but he also played quarterback and threw for 888 yards and 10 touchdowns. That's a heck of a year. And that's a lot of production, and he really fits kind of what I think Keenan Hall is trying to build with his running back room, because he's very different than I believe all the guys that he's recruited in 2025, and then with Davis Penn as well. You know, those guys are versatile. I think they have some upside to be three down running backs and really just be kind of your workhorse back. But what Rylan brings to the table is he's a really good pass catcher and he's a really explosive runner. So when you get him in the open field, you have a chance for a 50-yard touchdown. He has that kind of speed. But then you can also move him into the slot. You can use him on sweeps. You can use him in just a bunch of different ways, kind of like how Ebner was used in the last system, even though I think, you know, they're different players but can be utilized in similar ways, which makes him very dangerous, especially in a Jake Spavital offense. So this is a huge one. Anytime you land a top 10 recruit in your program's history, that's a big deal. And this was one that I felt like was coming, you know, as the weekend got closer and closer, because Keenan Hall has built such a great relationship with him. And quick note on that, Keenan Hall was his first offer when he was at SMU. When he got to Baylor, his first offer was also to Rylan Morris. So he made him feel like a priority the entire time.
Yeah, Keenan Hall has certainly turned out to be, well, on the recruiting front, an A++ hire. I don't think there's any question about that. We'll see how that translates to the football field here starting on Thursday. And, you know, ultimately in the regular season is what's going to matter the most. But recruiting-wise, I don't know how much more you could ask for from Keenan Hall and just the impact that he has had and bringing in yet another four-star. Rylan Morris, as Grayson mentioned, I'll just return to it, though, because people get obsessed with offers. USC... UTSA, who's just that's a team you respect their scouting opinion. Oregon, Oklahoma State, Stanford. So that tells you that he's got some brains. Oklahoma, Missouri, Miami, Michigan State, so on and so forth. I think you get the picture on his appeal and the amount of teams that want him speaks volumes. So Rylan Morris, commit number two for the class of 2026. Running back from Honey Grove, and gives the Bears two running backs in those first two commits for 2026. So, yeah, there's the Keenan Hall effect and liftoff for that class, and we'll see where it takes them ultimately. But as we mentioned, there's some momentum as fall camp starts. There's momentum on the recruiting front. And Grayson, Rylan Morris, his commitment came as part of the big recruiting weekend, the VIB weekend. Let's dive into that and just, discuss what the highlights were and just the storylines, I suppose, coming out of this weekend. Not a bunch of commits to have to go over, but they've already filled up a good portion of this 2025 class. And this is also about, as we mentioned, laying roots for 2026 and so forth. So what's the breakdown for the folks out there that want to know about VIB weekend?
Right. So VIB stands for Very Important Bears. It's a junior day, but they also had basically the entire 2025 class on campus as well, which was awesome. I mean, those guys came in and recruited, whether it was, you know, 2025 prospects or 2026 prospects. They really gave all of those uncommitted guys, I think, a great feeling about the Baylor program. I mean, when you see this kind of momentum, that's awesome. And to see, you know, all these rankings and to see these high profile guys commit to Baylor. But then when you actually get to talk to them on campus, I think you really get more insight into why they chose Baylor. And I think that really stood out to a lot of the 2026 prospects who Baylor's targeting. So I guess I'll just start with, you know, I went to camp early in the morning and I'm, you know, standing out there like I always do watching, you know, the normal camp. And I see a quarterback walk in and he's talking to Jake Spavital and Rhett Holcomb. And it's Edward Griffin, the Baylor 2025 commit. And he's just in normal clothes. He's just hanging out. So I'm like, all right, he's just going to watch practice, right? About 25 minutes goes later, he goes over and grabs a shirt for camp and puts it on, and he goes out there and competes at camp throughout the day, which was fun to see. I haven't gotten to see him throw in person. That was really encouraging to see. He looked really good, was very sharp. He had limited reps because a little bit later in the day, he actually had a, I guess you'd call it a private workout with Ashton Jones and Ja'Cory Watson, two wide receiver commits in the class. So they got to kind of get to know each other better and have a workout together. So I felt like that was pretty cool. Also that morning, I saw Jackson Prep offensive lineman Matthew Parker. He showed up at camp, did not compete in camp, but was walking around, talking to the staff, seemed like he was having a great time, followed Mason Miller around the entire practice, and they talked, and they really just, I think you could just tell that Matthew Parker was having a good time, which this is his second time on campus. He took an official visit in June, and so he's a guy who's was committed to Vanderbilt. He actually decommitted yesterday. And he's a guy who's a big-time target for Baylor on the offensive line and a guy who, again, went to camp, was there all day, and then he went to VIB day right after. So he's definitely a priority target. And then the final quick note just to start things off here, Cy Falls linebacker Caleb Burns and Texas Tech commit Caleb Burns. I also found out that he was taking a visit to Baylor kind of the day before heading into the morning. And so he ends up on campus. He goes to VIB day. We actually had him in the studio as well. I mean, he's certainly a big time flip target for this Baylor staff, for Jamar Chaney, as they really try to build out that linebacker core, in which they only have one commit right now, and it's Trent Spence. They need to take at least two. They might take more than that. But Caleb Burns has been a major target even after he picked Tech earlier in June. Baylor's continued to recruit him, and that consistency might pay off.
Yeah, I remember when he committed to Tech. I mean, it was down to them and Baylor, right? And that
SMU
was
SMU a little, but
a little bit of an SMU battle as well. But that was a fight that Baylor really wanted to win and thought they had a good chance to win. And even when he committed, even though it seemed pretty strong, I don't know, it felt like there was a little bit of a crack in the door left open. And there always is when you commit early. I mean, there's guys on Baylor's commit list right now, like they can't just sleep with both eyes closed. They got to keep their eyes, you know, one eye open as well. But that's one that you just kind of wrote a little note to and said, check back on this one later. And so here we are, it's a little bit later, and he's not sneaking, but he's making a surprise visit of sorts, I suppose. And so that's just, that's something that's notable and terms of having followed recruiting for a long time, that's not nothing. It's also not guaranteed that he's flipping, but I'd say there's a much greater chance of that happening than there was a week ago when he wasn't showing up at camp.
Definitely.
So that is something to definitely monitor.
And remember, the dead period starts in, what, a day? 2 days. So this was his last visit before fall camp and before football season. So literally it feels very much like, okay, I need to go see Baylor one more time so that I can, you know, figure out my decision, solidify things before this season begins. I think he has plans to do that, which again, I think Baylor's in a great spot to potentially flip him. That was very notable because he's a guy who they've been in on since the very beginning. He's been a priority guy. I would probably say he's been the top priority at linebacker for 6 months now. So again, this is a guy they really wanted, and to pull him from Tech would be massive. Obviously there's, you know, big rivalry type going on there and building there.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some friendly competition between the two staffs, and certainly on the recruiting trail, I feel like Tech has probably felt like they've owned a lot more of the momentum here recently, and they got the win last year, whereas Arandon them beat them up pretty good 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. They returned the favor last year. I think they're probably favored to be a better team this year, albeit not by much necessarily, because I think they're just in that same logjam of like, here's teams 4 through 16. You sort them out however. I mean, really though, yeah. they're in the same group ultimately. They're not like neither one of them's in a tier to their to their own. So who knows how that turns out? But yeah, I mean, there's definitely friendly competition and rivalry there. And so this is a guy who I think we're gonna see somebody feel really good at the end of this thing with whoever gets their hand raised here. Right now, Tech has that win, but obviously Baylor's making things interesting.
Yeah, they definitely are. There's quite a few other flip candidates that Baylor's looking at right now, but you got to check out the premium side for some more information on that. Let's talk a little bit about, I guess, quickly on the 2025 guys. Michael Turner and Taz Williams are recruiting at a very high level for Baylor right now. These two four-star commits that they have, Turner, a running back out of Richland, Taz Williams, a wide receiver out of Red Oak. These two guys feel like they are putting in a lot of work right now, whether it's for Caleb Burns or other guys on the recruiting trail, potential flip guys. They have been recruiting very, very hard. So just wanted to give them a shout out. The whole class is really doing an awesome job. And I think when you see the kind of momentum that they've built, it really speaks to that. You know, guys talking, guys communicating, talking about Baylor, really selling guys on Baylor and why they should come and join up with, other high-profile guys. And so that's kind of been, I think, a secret weapon, really, for this Baylor staff during this recruiting period. Moving to the 2026 side, we mentioned Rylan Morris. So he committed. He kind of had a perfect visit, I would say, because he got to come with Davis Penn, who is also committed. Also on the trip, you had Caden Knighton and Michael Turner, the other commits in the 2025 class. So that really all came together really well for the running back position, led to some great things. At quarterback, Liberty Christian quarterback Quinn Murphy came back to Baylor for another visit. He's been at Baylor a ton, three times in the last 4 months. He has been in Waco. And so I think right now he feels like the guy that's probably going to be it feels like he is a top target for them at the quarterback position. They had two other quarterbacks on campus as well, but it just feels like things are trending towards Quinn potentially being the quarterback in the 2026 class. So I think they made up some nice ground there and continue to really build on what I feel like has been a lead that they've had for a while. So it'd be nice to have a four-star quarterback like that in the fold.
So he went from Austin Regents to Argyle Liberty Christian, right?
Yeah, which is where Jason Witten coaches, and they're building a very elite program there.
Yeah, well, big season last year. I mean, 3,000 yards, 52 touchdowns, 8 interceptions at Austin Regents. So, yeah, that's monster numbers. The year prior, as a freshman, 2,400 yards, 33 touchdowns, and just a slight number of picks as well. So yeah, he can sling it a little bit. And yeah, now at Argyle Liberty Christian, so that ought to put even more of a spotlight on him and just change things up and raise his game, I would think, as well.
Yeah, they'll move up a level because I think Regents is 5A, I believe, for taps, so he'll move up to 6A now. So a little bit of a change there, but Liberty Christian's going to be awfully good, and he's going to put up some very impressive numbers. I think the big thing with him is, he gets back to campus, and he's seeing all this recruiting momentum, especially at wide receiver and running back. That's very appealing. And then he comes on campus for the 2026 class, and it's like, oh, Rylan Morris committed. Davis Penn is already committed. So there's two running back commits already. So there's two playmakers for the offense. And then also when you look at the wide receiver position, you got Red Oak wide receiver Braden Robinson, who's a four-star prospect, University wide receiver London Smith, who's also a four-star prospect.
And might be one of the more offered guys in Waco in the last 5-10 years, probably. I mean, he's got Oregon, U.S., like everybody's offered him at this point.
And
Alabama.
So he comes on campus, and those two guys are here too, and it's like, this is getting intriguing. You know what I mean? When you're starting to see all this talent come to Waco and y'all are all around each other and talking and, figuring out, what these guys are going to do, what their thoughts are on Baylor. And so, I mean, it's allowing the Bears to get off to a really, really strong start for the 2026 class, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
How much do you think all this hinges on winning this year? Like, I mean,
pretty much all of it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, because if you have a coaching change, I think whoever the coaching staff that would come in, I don't think they're going to hang on to the whole class. I think that's unrealistic to expect. They're going to lose a lot if they do have to go to a new staff. That's not to say that a new staff wouldn't be able to recruit well, but it might not be the same guys, right? And so, yeah, I mean, they all know this too, right? Like, Dave Aranda has to come out here and prove that not only can he win off the field with recruiting, but he can win on the field in the win-loss column. So, yeah, I mean, I would say pretty much all of it hangs on them having success this year.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be so blunt about it, but it's just like it is all trending very positive, and but it just kind of brings back down to earth a little bit of like, but they got to win this year to keep this all going. I mean, it's all great, but I mean, how many commits have we celebrated that never signed, and you know, it turned out completely different. So, just reeling it in a little bit because man, it's exciting. It's hard not to get kind of carried away with the recruiting part of it, but you also do need to like a little nudge of like, yeah, it's all great, but just a reminder. And I know everybody out there who follows Baylor knows what the hot seat looks like right now, but yeah, they gotta go out and win games. And that's going to be the most important thing here starting on Thursday.
Yeah. And the commits believe in that vision though. They believe that Baylor is going to be really good this year.
Well, that's also why I ask because like what's their level. I mean, cause they're also young guys and you just never know of like, oh, this is cool. Like, how aware are they of the situation? And so that's also why I ask is just, okay, yeah, they're mindful of, like, where we are with all this whole.
Yeah, and I think that's a big credit to Dave Aranda. He is, I mean, literally, I think pretty much every commit has mentioned that when they had that, they've all basically had that conversation with Aranda. And I think he's been very honest and truthful about it, but also very honest and truthful about the vision of the program and the direction that they are heading and the reasons why they struggled last year and the reasons why they're not going to this year. You know what I mean? So there's a belief there. And again, when you tell the truth very, very often, you're going to get kids to believe you. And he's been telling the truth throughout the entire recruiting process. And now it's just about putting the results on the field. And if they do that, I think they're going to keep pretty much all of this class together. And really, then you'll start to see a very, you know, big swell of momentum, I would say, if they can get to that point.
Yeah, I mean, there's a rising tide for sure. And there's a lot of momentum building. And I'm very excited about where it could potentially all go. But yeah, just I'm wondering that because of just the situation itself and just kind of the uncertainty of it all. And you're building all the success, but it's also like, all right, well, what happens if, and hopefully it doesn't get to that point, but yeah, I mean, it's also why I ask is to hear that. Yeah, no, Aranda's addressing it and they're taking it head on and it's not something they're avoiding or pretending it's like not out there. It's like, it's all out there in the open and clear. And that's good to know that everybody's just got that healthy communication going on. And despite that, everybody's buying in. I think that just speaks more to the strength of the class of that there is that element. It's not like he's Kirby Smart and he's not going anywhere no matter what for 10 years. And it's easy to have momentum in that situation. It's even more impressive when you're having it in spite of having to deal with a lot of other potential adversity. So, yeah, that's a good thing to make mention of. I was curious about this as well. How much are they showing off of the new football facility?
Not much.
The email come in about Meet the Bears, and it mentions that people are going to be able to go in and see, you know, the facility. I guess it's going to be – I don't know how that's going to be all set up, but we're going to get glimpses of it and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering about that as well.
So the one thing that I think was able to be viewed is kind of what the weight room is going to look like because it's on the bottom level. So I think you can kind of see the space, if that makes sense. But outside of that, there weren't tours this weekend. There wasn't anything super substantial. I know recruits can't wait for that. Everyone is very excited about it. Baylor is – really using that to their advantage right now as well. And they're going to use it a lot, I think, as you kind of move forward into the season. I think you're going to see a lot of high-profile targets visit Baylor to see the facility, which, I mean, people can say, oh, it's just to see the facility. But, hey, getting guys on campus any way that you can is a huge deal, especially when you're trying to recruit, you know, top 100 players in the country.
Yeah, certainly, and especially when it's such an upgrade from what you have had for the last however many years. I mean, decade plus, you've had pretty much the same facilities, and now it's going to be not just different, but drastically different and brand new. And we saw some of the reaction to the basketball facilities last week. Even a big shout out to Ashley Hodge and everybody was a part of the interview with Jeremy Roach in here just a few days ago, and he's coming over from a program like Duke basketball, and he's talking about how incredible the Baylor basketball facilities are in comparison. And it's, you just expect it's like Duke, right? They've got the best of the best, but it's like, no, this stuff is even better, if not, you know, or as good, if not better here. And so if he's saying that from a Duke basketball to perspective, I'm curious of what the reaction is going to be to the football facilities. And so to see that little note in the, I guess it's the Meet the Bears mm-hmm. event. We had talked about that, I think, a little bit last week. Just haven't had many updates, and so that's on track, it appears.
Yeah, and I heard the one thing I did hear was that the Sky Bridge is something really cool. That feature is actually going to be something that I think a lot of people will be big fans of. Obviously, it leads you into the indoor, and then it leads you into the weight room. So it kind of goes, that's the two ways that it ends up.
I'm excited to see it because just the skeleton of it was, I mean, it was completely different being out there versus what it was like before because it's a whole building that just wasn't even there. It was just the indoor and
grass.
A little bit of the river. And now it's like this L-shaped building that includes the indoor that blocks it in a bit more, mm-hmm. and there's just a little bit more of a space to see McLean Stadium, but it's more contained and more of like a compound almost. Right. And so just seeing the skeleton of it, it's going to be amazing, especially that Sky Bridge and the indoor and all of that. So I'm very excited. But, yeah, let's continue on. We've addressed just kind of the feel around the program and everybody's aware of the situation, but they're all bought in and believing that it's on the uptick. Got the facility that they haven't debuted yet, but they've still got that bad boy to unleash. And so let's continue on now with, I guess, some of the other notes that you had on just this weekend, VIB weekend, that turned out to be quite lucrative with one commit, but also perhaps more coming out of this weekend.
Right. I mean, I think right now kind of the important thing is, you know, they were able to get a lot of their top targets at multiple positions, whether it was cornerback, you know, getting Jamarian Vincent, who's a Connolly prospect. He was on campus. He's been a big-time target for them. He's a four-star prospect, another local kid.
And they haven't had a ton of great success with Waco guys here lately.
And there were a few. I mean, university safety, Devontre Kirkland is another one. I mean, there are a lot of really good prospects in the area right now that Baylor's, you know, really trying to put some work in for.
Tell you, man, London Smith's got, again, I said it a little while ago, he's got about as impressive as an offer list, and I'm talking about Parrish Cobb, and I mean, name the guys that you want to name from Waco, Andrew Billings, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
He's got that type of offer list, if not some more impressive.
His ranking dropped, which was a little suspicious for me, but he was like a top, I think he was like a top 25 guy for a while, and now he's top 150, but that's a big difference. So I don't know what made that change come about.
Cancel his A&M visit or something?
Maybe something along those lines. So that's weird because he is a national prospect. Like, he is a very, very good prospect. And again, a few other guys in the area that are also national type prospects. So yeah, again, they're doing a great job. I know a lot of questions have been, well, what about the defensive side of the ball, especially for 2026? But it's also like, it's only two commits right now. There's a lot of time left, and I think Baylor's gotten a lot of their top targets on campus, which is very impressive, and that's a big step towards, you know, filling out your class. And also right now, 2025 is the focus, and they've done a great job in that class, and there's a few decisions still kind of lingering there. Oaks Christian tight end Stevie Amar still hasn't made any decision yet. I think Cal and Boston College are the biggest competitions there. Jaden Sanders is going to make his decision on August 10th. I believe that's going to be between Michigan, TCU, and Baylor. He visited Michigan for the barbecue this past weekend and then set his commitment date for August 10th. So that's another big one. He's a four-star prospect in the 2025 classic cornerback. So another kind of thing to watch, I would say. So a lot of momentum, a lot of still decisions out there. But in general, I think the biggest takeaway here is that the momentum continues and the vibes are really, really good among Baylor recruits, commits, and just guys that they're targeting going forward and amongst the staff. The vibes are really, really good going into fall camp.
Well, it's been a pretty successful summer. I think that's fair to say. Numerous four-stars joining the fold for the 2025 and now 2026 class. A lot of momentum filling up in 25, getting 26 started now with their second pledge there with Ryland Morris from Honey Grove up in the northeast Texas area. And so that's exciting, especially looking at, you know, a lot of people look at the offer list and you're getting some of those types of guys now where you're like, hey, it's not just, you know, the same three schools, a UTSA and, you know, New Mexico and, like, Tulsa or something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's some pretty big boys on the list of some of the guys are starting to land, and those stars are starting to tick up as well. And so that's always just – that creates excitement, and you can definitely feel that right now. You've got the indoor that's got the finishing touches being put on that we just talked about. They're going to be able to unveil that soon. Going to have Meet the Bears right around the corner and just counting down to the season. But seems like it's been a very productive offseason. I did want to make one more mention of the Nicky Collins story that we led off with, because now I saw the detail. I didn't see this earlier, but that contract extension that we mentioned for her runs through 2030. So I don't think that I mentioned that. I just wanted to put that out there. We're not going to get dollar figures, I'll tell you that much. But we did get the year, and so I wanted to follow up. 2030, so long-term investment in Nicky Collin. And there you go with that, which I'm sure we'll talk about much more in the coming months as we get closer to basketball season. But definitely the focus right now on football. And so we touched on recruiting and even a little bit of facilities as well. We've talked uniforms this offseason. We've talked, like every little change they could make, the coaching staff, whether it was willingly or unwillingly because guys got other opportunities and decided to leave or you decided to make changes. The staff has been shaken up. So uniforms, staff, personnel, facilities, everything's different to a degree. Will all this matter in the long run? You sure hope so, because you want this all to take off and see where it can go, especially when it feels as good as it does right now. But that will ultimately come down to winning football games, of course. That's the name of the game at the end of the day in big-time college athletics. And so what do we think of these Baylor Bears, and are they going to win some football games this fall? We're going to start finding out a bit more on Thursday, Grayson. So I guess let's just kind of dive in and preview this unofficially of sorts. We'll obviously have our game week previews and all of that coming up here over the coming weeks, and that'll be exciting to start to get into a little bit. But I think the biggest question that remains right now, let's just start at the most important position, that's quarterback. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the undecided storyline right now at the top of the heap when it comes to positions. Certainly there's some shuffling along the O-line and things like that that will be figured out, but this is your main spot. This is your guy, your QB1. Daquan Finn brought in a big investment. Sawyer Robertson the year before was a notable investment. Both guys have been handpicked to be the quarterback of the now and the future. They battled throughout the spring, maybe even more so than people expected them to. I certainly don't think everybody was expecting to be near August and still not have a starter named. Some of that by design, of course. How long that lasts with a month to go is, I think, the big question mark right now. But quarterback, let's just start there. What are your thoughts as they break camp with Robertson and Finn? And a decision to be made here pretty soon.
I mean, it really feels like it's going to be Daquan Finn as the starting quarterback for Baylor. I think it should be Daquan Finn. I've been pretty adamant about that for a while now. I think obviously the investment to get him to Baylor is key. I think the fact that, you know, during spring camp, you're not, you know, hitting the quarterback very much, and this guy's elite trait is what he does in the open field. And obviously you're not going to have your quarterback getting, you know, hit by linebackers and safeties running full speed very often in the spring. I think in the fall, you know, when he's able to show that, I think that will ultimately be the difference in kind of their decision-making process here. What he can do outside the pocket is very impressive and something that I think separates him. But, you know, he got on the Maxwell Award watch list this week as well. So he's, again, it just feels like everything's trending in that direction, whether it's, you know, from national writers, from, you know, what was said at Big 12 Media Days. It just really feels like things are trending towards him being the guy. But it just seemed like Sawyer Robertson had a really good spring camp. He gave himself a chance, and Baylor wants to see what they can do in the fall. And I think that's a great decision, because we saw that not play out very well, you know, with Blake Shapen and Gary Bohannon. And so now they're kind of giving them more time to compete. And I think that's a great thing. This team needs more competition at every single position. So I'm good with it, but I still think Daquan Finn will be the guy for the first game against Tarleton State.
Yeah, I think it'll be Daquan Finn as well. You just hope, and I've said this kind of elsewhere, but you hope that it's a stalemate or it's a battle because they're both playing so well, right? And it's not because like nobody's like taking the job and running with it, because that's the last thing you want is like, no, you need somebody to grab the reins and be like, I'm the man and follow me into battle. And if you're really fortunate, both guys are that way, and it's been a tough decision because they're both playing so well. That's what you hope for. So we are awaiting that. I think that's storyline number one, obviously, because you want to know who your starting quarterback is, and if you've got two guys who are competing this closely, then that's something that can definitely spill over into the season. And Do you have a rotation? No, probably not. Yeah. But you got to ultimately decide what you're going to do. And so I'm just curious of within now and this kickoff to Tarleton State of when that possibly comes. Maybe it's in 2 days. Maybe they start off camp and they say, Daquan's the man. We're kicking off practices. Or maybe it lasts a couple more weeks. But regardless, that is definitely one of the top storylines to monitor. And so we wait on that decision there. Meanwhile, I guess you just want to kind of roll through the offense a little bit. Running back wise, you're bringing back everybody. I mean, in full, you got Dominic Richardson back. Dawson Pendergrass was a good revelation last year. Richard Reese coming off of a year where, honestly, it was quite forgettable in regards to Richard Reese after a really good true freshman year. He was not really a part of the mix very much, if at all. Now, they couldn't run the ball, and that didn't help anybody. But he just seemed like he was brought in by a different staff or something almost. You know, it was like a square peg in a round hole. And now that's a little bit different. I mean, he was brought to Big 12 Media Days. He seems to be in good spirits. They seem to have big plans for him. So you can just start with those guys, and then it trickles down into, you know, some of the younger names that we haven't seen as much of. But I think you got a pretty good starting base with the likes of Reese and Richardson and Pendergrass and so on and so forth. And obviously some guys who you just wonder about that haven't seen playing time at this point, kind of where do they fall into the line of what's to come.
So first of all, I think Richard Reese is going to be the lead running back for this team this year, but I think it will be a split backfield. That is what Jake Spavitaugh has done a ton during his career. Unless he has a talent of the level of a Jade Knott or someone, or I think also Trey Carson at A&M, he hasn't really just handed the ball to one running back every single time. He's really divvied it up. And so I think Dawson Pendergrass is probably going to be the next most productive guy. I think he fits this scheme really well, and he's a good pass catcher, which I do think will be utilized in this offense. Outside of that, we mentioned Dominic Richardson. I think he'll be fine in this offense. I don't think he's going to be as productive as the other two. And then you also have Bryson Washington, who actually had a really nice spring. And so I'm curious if it was a really nice spring and him scoring touchdowns just because it kind of just played out that way, or because he's actually going to have a bigger role this year. He had a really nice spring as a freshman as well, so it's now just kind of about putting that all together. Also excited to see Joseph Dodds, the four-star running back who they brought in. I expect him to redshirt, but I'm excited to see kind of what he can bring to the table.
Yeah, so I think running back you feel really good about. Not necessarily having a star, but, like, do you have the guys that can get the job done? I feel very confident that you do. Yeah. I don't think you have a Doak Walker guy right now, but I think you've got a number of options that can get done what you need to get done. Mm-hmm. And so,
depth.
Yeah, and
great.
Depth. So you feel good there. Wide receiver, got a lot of different options. Ketron Jackson, amongst your, I guess, bigger names that are coming back. Hal Presley as well. But mostly this is about the transfer portal, honestly. You shed some guys who weren't producing for you and kind of unclogged the, the depth chart a little bit with just guys who'd been around for a couple years and weren't reaching the level that you needed them to reach. And so you decided to go get in the transfer portal and bring in guys like Ashton Hawkins, for example, who you're expecting to be a big part of what they do this year. And you also have some younger guys that you're banking on to start to kind of move up the depth chart. A Jaden Porter eventually, maybe not this year, but over time, certainly sooner rather than later, you want him to produce. But you need your transfers to hit. And you need your Ketron Jacksons and your Hal Presleys and those guys to definitely take a big step up and be more authoritative, be more forceful, and to just be better across the board. I think you're looking for the receivers to grow up a lot this year because they were very quiet and kind of just there at times a year ago. It felt like they were sort of finding themselves in a way, and it feels like they've got a much clearer direction now heading into this season.
It's been that way for 2 years, because 2022, I mean, we all talk about how bad 2022 was, and my goodness, the receivers were a huge part of that. They were really bad that year, and so they took a little step in a better direction last year, but I think this year you're going to see kind of, I think this position's going to be awesome for Baylor. I'm actually really excited about their receiving core going into the season. You rattled off all those names that you talked about and didn't even mention Monterey Baldwin, which has happened to me during this time period, because it's like, oh, you mentioned, you know, Keytron Jackson.
I was trying to think of all the transfers they brought in, and I was thinking of Ashton Hawkins, and I couldn't land on the other names. But yeah, Jamal Bell is one that I'm not thinking of. But yeah, absolutely, I'm forgetting Monterey freaking Baldwin of all people. Right. So there you go.
And he's going to be like awesome in this offense, I think, as a deep threat, and just what he does with his speed and with the ball in his hands, he's gonna be fun to watch. Ashton Hawkins, we're expecting big things from him. Ketron Jackson, like you mentioned a little earlier, I'm expecting him to take a massive step in the right direction. And then Jamal Bell, just a speedster, a guy with a lot of reps during his career at Nevada, also an elite return man as well. So you're going to see his speed again on full display. This position I am very, very excited about. I think whoever the quarterback is for Baylor is going to have a lot of weapons to work with and a lot of different body types, right? When you look at Hal Presley and Ketron Jackson and Josh Cameron, but then also you got Monterey Baldwin and Ashton Hawkins and Jamal Bell, guys who get open. Jaden Porter, who I actually think of all the freshmen, probably has the highest chance of not redshirting. I could see him playing a big role in the slot, and if anyone gets hurt, I think he's going to be the next man up.
So wide receiver, feeling pretty good about that, clearly, and let's go ahead to the final position group, and that means both outside and inside receiver. I mean, like across the board at all the receiver spots, I think you feel pretty great about. There's not like a you're good on the outside, the inside. Mm-hmm. You don't really have a guy. Like, you definitely are good on the inside. But, I mean, I think for the first time you feel pretty good about the outside options as well.
Well, and I also think, you know, tight end, just quickly, because I think Michael Trigg is going to play outside as well. Okay. And so he gives you another option there to go outside and kind of be a difference maker there. And Kelsey Johnson in the slot as well. So those are two other nice options, I think, for this passing attack.
Yeah, I mean, you've got those two in terms of just, I guess, the guys we're probably going to see more often than not, especially catching the football. And Trigg, he brought in through the portal from Ole Miss, and then Johnson, who's back for his third consecutive year. But then a lot of young guys, Cody Mladenka, Hawkins Polly, Matthew Klopfenstein, also part of that mix as well. So,
and tight Gavin end, Yates, a really good blocker.
Yeah, Gavin Yates, who's, you know, played fullback, and he's been kind of one of those guys for you, blocker, and just do what you need to get done, get dirty for you, and, you know, make a block and catch the ball, take a carry if he needs to. Mm-hmm. He's kind of done a little bit of everything over the course of his career. So, yeah, definitely gives you some a veteran presence there as well. But I think all told comes together and gives you a group of like six guys that this isn't Jeff Grimes' offense where I think you need 10 tight ends. Mm-hmm. So I think whatever you're looking for, so long as somebody like a Trigg is able to break out and be a receiving threat on occasion for you, I think you've got everything you need in this room. It might be a little young in some spots, but I think you've got what you need.
Yeah, you got kind of the perfect blend of, you know, your Kelsey Johnson, who's your prototypical tight end, but then with Klopfenstein and Trigg, you have true wide receivers. You know what I mean? Guys who you can move outside, and that's what I expect from Trigg. I don't expect him to be an inline blocker all that often. I think he's going to be a receiver. I think Kelsey Johnson, Hawkins, Polly, Gavin Yates will be more your inline blockers, the guys that you're asking to move people in the run game.
So, offense is perfect. Let's move on.
Yeah, right.
all the skill positions look really good and you're excited about, but it all boils down to how they're being blocked for and how much time they're being allowed to run their routes down the field or scan the field to find receivers if you're Daquan Finn or Sawyer Robertson. So that brings us to the biggest question of the entire offseason, more so than Dave Aranda calling plays, more so than who the quarterback is. Can this offensive line hold up? Can they block? Can they be average? That is the biggest question, and I really do not know at this point. We know they've had the late retirement with Kurt Daneker, and so that threw you for a little bit of a loop, although you offset that with Colin Truitt late in the spring portal period. But even still, you were going to have questions whether Daneker was in the lineup or out of it just because you've turned over again at the coaching position. For what, the third year in a row with a new coach?
Third
coach in less than a year. Yeah, is, eight is actually, yeah. Because you had the hire that never even showed up on campus,
right,
who's now at Alabama, whose name I'm already forgetting. But that coming over from Jeff Grimes, you had now at Alabama guy, who I'm not saying that disrespectfully.
Chris Kapilovich.
Thank you, yeah. Chris Kapilovich. It was a cup of coffee, you know. He came and went. And now Mason Miller. So you've had three coaches since the start of the year. You brought in transfers. You've got young guys who were playing early last year, probably earlier than they needed to be. I mean, what do you think, man? What are we expecting here on offensive line? Because this is going to kind of be the determining factor, I feel like, offensively on what the ceiling looks like.
Right. I think them losing Kurt Daneker and knowing about it for a while was a big reason why they ended up taking three more offensive linemen during the summer. And I do believe that that is telling about kind of where I think the staff believes they're at. I think they believe there needs to be more competition. I think they need more size, which is why you saw them go get Colton Thomason and Sidney Fugar, both from SEC programs in South Carolina and Texas A&M. Two just much bigger bodies. And remember, Kurt Daneker was like 332 pounds. And they brought in Colin Truitt, but Colin Truitt's like 310 pounds. There's a big difference there in kind of what you're looking at between the two. And I think Colin Truitt's going to be a starter for this team, but they're different, right? You know, Daneker was more of a guy who's going to move people up front. Truitt's much better, I think, in pass protection. So you kind of have a weird dilemma there where it's like, okay, do we need bigger bodies up front? Do we need bigger bodies at guard? How are we going to kind of divvy this up? Do we think our tackles are good? You know, I think Alvin Mebasele is going to be awesome for this team. And I mentioned him actually on our website as the breakout player of the year in my eyes for Baylor. Could have gone a number of ways, but I think he's going to take a massive step in the right direction. But I do have questions about, you know, Campbell Barrington. I got questions about Gavin Byers. I got questions about the interior of the offensive line when you look at, you know, Colin Truitt and, you know, what are you going to get from Colton Thomason and Sidney Fugar? I just think there's a lot of names that we're talking about, but not a lot of proven production. And so that's kind of what I'm going to be looking to see. But right now my optimism is low that they're going to be really good. Like, I don't think they're going to be really good. For them to be average, I think that they're probably going to need guys like Truitt, Fugar, and Thomason to really come in and be, you know, dudes immediately. And so we'll see if they can get to that point. I think ultimately it's still going to be a weakness for this offense.
Yeah, it's hard to see how it won't be. It's just to what degree is it a weakness? But you like everything around it, and if they can be better than expected, then, man, there's a lot of reasons to love what they could possibly do offensively. So
really quickly, I also want to mention that's a reason why I also think Daquan Finn will be the starting quarterback, because his ability to avoid sacks has truly been elite, because he had terrible offensive lines at Toledo and made it work and got better every single year at avoiding sacks until last year. I think he was only at like 8.4% sack rate, which if you want to compare that, both Sora Robertson and Blake Shapen were in the 20s. Percentage wise. So that just kind of tells you the difference there in their ability to avoid pass rush.
So on the other side of the football, defensively, been a lot of changes there as well. Starting on the D line, had Dennis Johnson move on to go take a job with the Baltimore Ravens. Anoki Brechterfield comes in. You had Jamar Chaney come in as well. Matthew Pallage, no longer DC, other than in title only, but more just your safeties coach now, I guess working with special teams, yeah. I would imagine, as well. Dave Aranda, obviously much more influential, coaching linebackers in addition to being your play caller on defense. But as far as talent, what are they looking at? We know that they're going to have a lot of different looks. We know that they're going to have a lot of guys coming off the edge. We know they're going to kind of shake up how they've done things a little bit in terms of trying to create pressure on the quarterback and using some of what would be your jack guys or whatever, more of a hybrid defensive end linebacker of just, you know, guys coming off the edge, like I said. Yeah. So you can kind of divvy this up how you want to, but defensive line-wise, you've got the likes of Cooper Lance coming back, Devontae Tizino, Brendan Bett, some of the young guys from Killeen there, and Bett and Tizino. You've got Trey Wilson, another young guy. You've got then some older players, Tonga, Lolahea, Trevin Maye. There's a collection of names, whether you're looking at nose tackle or D-end or however you want to situate them. And then you want to include, you know, your Jack or whatever, your Garmin Randolphs, your Steve Linton's and those types of players that can be that hybrid that is also coming off and creating some chaos as well. So I guess just kind of grouping all those guys together, how would you, grade your feelings on what they look like up front defensively and as far as creating some pressure on the quarterback and being able to cover as well, do a little bit of everything?
For pure defensive linemen, I think this is going to come down to whether it's a year too early or not, because I think there's big expectations for me on guys like Trey Wilson, Brendan Bett, Kyan Roberts-Day, Alex Foster, DK Kalu.
Young.
Like, and that's not to say I'm not, fully optimistic in Jackie Marshall, Cooper Lands, Alinus Noel. Like, I think that group of three is probably going to be your best three defensive linemen. But I do think the upside really lies in those younger guys. And not so much that they can, I just think that if they don't perform well, the floor for this unit completely drops off. They need to have depth. They did not have that last year because I think they have the guys in the starting rotation to be really good. But if those younger guys don't take another step, then I think they're going to have some issues. I fully expect at least two of them to be very, very solid. And if they can get that, then I think they're going to be just fine on the interior of the defensive line. Now, on the flip side, when you talk about edge, I'm actually very optimistic about the edge position because I think when you bring in talents like Steve Linton and Jacquez Evans, talent who also have proven production, I think it pairs really nicely with Garmon Randolph, who has not been consistent. And so to have some more options there, I think is really, really intriguing. And so I think that group of three is going to be a really, really nice shift. They're going to get some pressure on the quarterback. So in general, I think I feel okay about the defensive line, but I do have questions about the depth when it comes to how old they are, especially on the interior.
So we got about 20 minutes left, and I do want to get to some of the mailbag questions. So let's try to roll through these here. Linebacker, you got Matt Jones in the middle. You've got Kendrick Simpkins that you brought in as well to be your or not Kendrick Simpkins, who am I thinking
Keaton
of?
Thomas.
Keaton Thomas. You brought in Keaton Thomas, who's a young guy as well in his own right, but very likable. Those are your starters. Beyond that, you've got a lot of questions about Carmelo Jones and Jeremy Evans and guys like that, but how do you feel about linebacker?
I think a guy that hasn't been mentioned enough is Ra-Ra Dilworth. They got him from Eastern Carolina, kind of one of those just like super under-the-radar pickups that they had, and I think he's going to be a very nice addition. He's going to come in for certain packages, play some will linebacker at times, again, in certain looks that they try to provide, but I think he'll be a nice depth piece for them and play quite a few snaps, so I'm intrigued by him. And then I'm excited to see which young guy steps up. You know, is Jeremy Evans going to get on the field? Is Kylan Reed going to be a dude as a true freshman? Are we finally going to see it from Carmelo Jones or Josh White? I think those are questions that I'm still kind of looking at that position for the depth pieces.
Yeah, I like the starters. I don't know much what to think about the depth beyond the starters. And Matt Jones, his last hurrah, hoping he can stay healthy and just give it all he's got. What a player. And I know it's been very up and down at times for him, but I think he's got his best left to show this year. And just a matter of, again, do they have the depth behind the starters to keep that position afloat? Cornerback, I think this is a room you feel really good about. Caden Jenkins, Tevin Williams, Chateau Reed, Isaiah Dunson back from injury.
Snacks.
Snacks Johnson, Lorando Johnson back from Arkansas. I don't know how all the pieces are going to work exactly in the secondary, but just in pure corner, it looks like that's about as healthy as you are at any position on defense, honestly.
Right. I love Baylor's cornerbacks this year. And also, we got to mention LeVar Thornton in that group as well. I think he's got a very high ceiling. That's a group that I'm pretty excited about. They need to be really good as well, because we know that there are going to be some question marks still at safety in my eyes, which we'll get to here in a minute. So they need their cornerbacks to be able to hold up and also be able to play some press coverage. I think that will help Baylor's secondary a little bit if they can hold up in those type of situations. Feel great, obviously, about Caden Jenkins, but I love the depth that they have, the athleticism, and the length that they have out there at cornerback. It's very intriguing. And they have some guys with experience, which is nice to see.
And then at your safety spots, classified as a nickel or your star as well. I mean, however, it's fluid, kind of how they're going to use a lot of different pieces this year. But just, throwing all that grouping together of what they're actually going to end up doing. You've got the Devons, Devon Lemire, Devon Bobbier, a couple of your contributors coming back, DJ Coleman, Kendrick Simpkins you brought into the fold, Carl Williams the fourth, Corey Gordon, and they're not all playing the same position, obviously. They're spread over, star, nickel, free safety, strong safety, what have you. But I don't know. Do you have a good feel of how they're going to kind of spread the love here? And do you like the depth? I mean, I think safety is much more of a question mark than corner, obviously. And, mm-hmm. and one of the bigger question marks maybe on the team, although there's a lot of familiar faces returning.
I think it's probably my biggest question mark on the defense, actually, which is kind of surprising, I feel like, because you return two starters in Devon Lemire and Devon Bobbier, but both those guys need to have better years than they had a year ago. I felt like both of them took a step back from what they did in 2022. So if they can get back to playing like that, I think that would be huge for them. I think DJ Coleman has very high upside, so I think he's going to be kind of your rotational guy at safety and play a ton of snaps. Very curious about Mason Dossett and Josh Lair, two true freshmen who might be able to find the field if they're struggling again at safety, especially if they're struggling in coverage. And then you also mentioned, you know, Kendrick Simpkins kind of being that pass rusher and guy who will line up close to the line of scrimmage and create havoc in the backfield. That's what you brought him in for. But I think of all the guys, I think their best guy at safety this year is going to be Carl Williams. I think he's going to play kind of multiple different positions. They're going to move him around a ton. And I think he's going to be very, very good. And if they can get, you know, good to great play from him, I think that would solidify a lot of things, particularly their ability to cover slot receivers, which was abysmal a year ago.
Yeah, there's a lot of upside here. It's just a lot of unknown. Even though we have seen some of these guys quite a bit, it's a matter of can they take their game to a different level this year? I think it's particularly with the Devons. You're like, hey, can you be better, and can the young guys come along and be better, and can you just all tides, you know, or all, what is it, strong tide lift all boats, yes. Something like, I don't know what I'm looking for there, but can you all play off each other and make each other better is going to be a big key for the safety room. But there is some talent there. There's a lot of questions, though, for sure, and if that's your biggest concern outside of, like, O-line, I wouldn't fault you for that whatsoever. I think that's probably the case for quite a few folks. So there you have it with the defensive backs wrapping up the defense. And then let's be honest, we don't need to spend a lot of time. I mean, we don't know on special teams. I mean, there's a little bit to know, but you can't guarantee a kicker, a college kicker, is the same way he was a year ago, because we've seen where that's not the case. We've seen a guy be really good and then come back and act like he won the Super Bowl a year ago. And
well, they need Isaiah Hankins to kick a lot better than last year.
Right. Yeah, but they've had starters return and then like act like they are the quarterback MVP, you know, and going to Disneyland. It's like, dude, you're just a college kicker. Like, college kickers, hashtag college kickers, you know the deal.
But you can trust punters, and I think Palmer Williams is going to be a very good one for Baylor, kind of really solidify that position,
so
right?
You have Isaiah Hankins back at kicker, Jack Stone as well, Palmer Williams at punter. You've got, is Garrison Grimes still in the roster? I believe so.
I think so.
Yeah, so long snapper, he was your guy last year and he got hurt, if you'll remember. And then, you know, you get into your holders and all that. We don't really have the details on how all that's going to work necessarily. At your turn spots, you've got guys like Richard Reese and Jamal Bell and Josh Cameron and Monterey Baldwin. I think you feel great about the return, man.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's going to come down
with
to
Bell.
Yeah, it's going to come down to what's coming off the foot of these guys. And so Palmer Williams you feel good about, but I guess the big question then would be kicker as far as just the overall special teams look. Other than that, I think you feel good about what you have and the fact that Matthew Pallage is probably going to be a bit more involved as well.
Yeah, I feel like this group will take a step in the right direction, which they need to. They were not good enough last year. Had too many bad moments. Had a couple good moments, like the Cincinnati game with that Byron Vaughn's return for a touchdown on the kickoff. A couple, but in general, it wasn't good enough. And it really, you know, it might have cost them the Utah game, honestly, their special teams, if you look back on it.
And you look back at Matt Rule's teams where they put a big, I guess, emphasis on special teams, or at least made it outwardly known there was a big emphasis there, and that won them a couple of games, blocking a kick here and there. And so it gets overlooked because people focus on offense or defense, but this is the type of program right now where I think special teams is where you might have that extra win or two, and so I think it's very important and not something that you can overlook. So I think there's some things to like about that group as well, and that's where they are as we enter camp. I mean, we've gone over the coaching changes ad nauseum throughout the last few months. You you know, we'll talk about some of the new faces as they start to ingratiate themselves and look like maybe some guys are going to play early and we're more deserving of talking about them a little bit more. But, I mean, we kind of know what's what other than a few decisions like who's the starting quarterback. So I don't know, man. I feel like you've done just about all you can do with this roster and with this team. And so I feel good that they're going to be competitive. I don't know how many wins that turns into, but I think anything short of a bowl game would obviously create a little bit of chaos within the program and a lot of uncertainty. And I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be able to reach that goal and maybe even go a little bit beyond that. I don't think this is a Big 12 championship team, but I do think this is a team that should be competitive week in and week out. And if they're not, then, yeah, that's going to be a little bit puzzling.
Yeah, you're going to probably have to make a change if they're not. But I fully expect them to be a bowl team. I think this team's good enough. The schedule is also not that daunting, to be honest. So, yeah, I have optimism that they can make it back to a bowl game, which is what they need to do this year.
So that's where we are with the roster as fall camp kicks off on Thursday. Just a little bit of a rundown on where we find ourselves. Let's get to the mailbag to close it out this week. And Paul Bufano says, I don't think I've seen any recruits post photos in the new uniforms. Is there a rule that makes them wait, or do they just want the team to be the first to wear them?
I don't think there's a rule or anything, but I also think that they probably would like the team to be the first ones to take photos in them. I think that makes sense. I don't think there was a huge photo shoot for Junior Day, and that would have been the only time that they would have done that. And so, yeah, I think that's probably playing a big factor into that, and eventually you'll see it, but
yeah,
not right now.
You haven't officially unveiled them yourself yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, worn them out on the field. So I think once you do that, then they'll be fair game to wear them at will on every photo shoot. But I think, yeah, you're probably holding that back a little bit just for your guys already on the roster to really sport those for the first time. Thank you, Paul. WTT78, are we just not doing single digits anymore? I see them in photos with recruits, but I don't see anyone on the team with a single digit other than Matt Jones and Brent. BU Bear mentioned that it was said in another thread, but easy to miss, that Aranda no longer is doing that tradition and Brent liked it himself.
Yeah, not doing the tradition, but I think that those jerseys will be used this year because they weren't really used last year. Like, there were numbers that were free.
Clearly,
I think
that
will change. Yeah, I think that will change this year.
At Media Days, he said they're using them.
Yeah. Okay. He said they're using them as single.
Yeah.
Using the jerseys. The kind of rewarding.
Which makes sense. Yeah. I mean, that feels like what it would be. So thanks for that, Jack. But yeah, so using them, but not the same tradition that it used to be. But I still feel like there is kind of this side of you have to earn them. So it's kind of like it, but not being advertised.
They're just not making a big to-do about it, basically. It's going to matter. If you get the number one jersey, you earned it. But they're not making a whole deal of crowning you the guy wearing the number one jersey, basically. Baylor Bear 2022, who commits first, Burns or Parker?
I'll go with Parker. Matthew Parker, Jackson Prep, offensive lineman out of Mississippi. He decommitted from Vanderbilt yesterday, so I think he'll be the first one. Caleb Burns still is committed to Tech, but obviously that could change. He could decommit and then commit immediately. So we'll see, but ultimately I think Baylor's in a good spot with both.
Useless Kim Degree, with Coach Aranda loosening up things like jewelry at practice, could that bleed over into other areas? Do you think Baylor comes up with some kind of ridiculous big play gimmick like we've seen from other teams, the turnover chain from Miami, spiked pads from Georgia, or the sword thing from Arizona?
I have zero idea if they're going to be doing that or not, but, I mean, sure, they could.
Yeah, I mean, didn't they have like a little Tykes basketball goal on the sideline when Rule was here maybe at one point in time? And yeah, there's been all sorts of variations on that. But I think they have more fun than I think they're given credit for, honestly. I think that everybody assumes it's all stoic like Dave Aranda is. That's not necessarily always the case, but they could definitely loosen it up a little bit. I don't know if that'll translate, though, into him like bringing a turnover chain into the into the mix, but maybe they'll find something unique that fits all parties. Doc Crow, was there a feeling Schoble was waiting on TCU even when he committed to Baylor, talking about former Baylor and Oklahoma State now quarterback commit, turn TCU commit Adam Schoble, which is where his dad went and where it just all should have started and ended to begin with, basically.
Went there as well. But I mean, the reason for it was that TCU had a four-star quarterback commit for a long time in Ty
Jennings.
Hawkins.
Oh, yeah.
Hawkins. Yeah, Ty Hawkins, who then flipped to SMU. So I would say there wasn't a feeling that he was waiting on TCU, because they had their guy, and then he was Baylor's guy, and then when Sean Bell left, things changed, obviously. But yeah, I mean, I do think in general, if TCU was did ever open up and they tried to recruit him, it obviously would have been a battle, and he might have still ended up at TCU.
Yeah, well, good for him, and good luck to him, and they'll be seeing him soon enough. But I would think third and final stop on the commit train at this point with your legacy choice in TCU. Wyatt Smith, which offensive and defensive players are you most excited to see perform in fall camp?
Jeez, okay. Offensive side, Alvin Ebosele, Ashton Hawkins, Michael Trigg. Defensive side, Jackie Marshall, Keaton Thomas, Carl Williams.
Carl Williams, Caden Jenkins, Kelsey Johnson, Bryson Washington, and Ketron Jackson. I mean, there's a bunch of guys. Like, there's so many guys.
We didn't even say Daquan Finn.
Daquan Finn's the very top of the list, and yet we're just blanking on him because there's just a lot of guys that you're looking forward to seeing. But, yeah. Excited about a lot of different people, Wyatt. He also asks, who do you think had the most improvement this offseason? Thank you, as always. Well, thank you.
That's a good question. Most improvement. I think Carl Williams is definitely a candidate for that. I think he took a huge step in the right direction.
He carries himself like a future pro.
Yes, he does, and he's been that way for a while. And so I think you're going to see him really turn some heads, I think, this fall. So he'd be a big one. Again, I've mentioned Alvin Ebosele a few times. I think he's going to be kind of a dude pretty soon. So he'd be another one that I would probably put in that group. I think kind of those guys who are transfers, when you look at Alinus Noel or Colton Thomason or Sidney Fugar, guys who kind of, you know, they enrolled and then they just had the summer to try to, you know, get into game shape and get themselves into shape for fall camp. I think those are guys who also took a nice step in the right direction.
Thank you, Wyatt. Mentioned Brent's comment about the single digits and Billy 21. Jonah Williams, safety out of Galveston, sitting out there with five stars. Is Baylor pursuing him? Undoubtedly outstanding safety. Sikkim Bears get the best.
I mean, it would be great if Baylor could land him, but no, I do not see that one happening. And Baylor, from what I know, just talking to Jonah, I don't think Baylor's been in contact with him in the recent days, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Is he a Texas A&M kind of prospect?
Oregon,
Alabama, that kind of deal?
Like it's everyone. Yeah. He's a highly rated guy.
Five-star guy, yes. Yeah. That's interesting. You don't see a lot of Galveston five-stars, do you? Like, I don't feel like you do. So that's very unique for Jonah Williams. So, yeah, Billy, wish we had better news there, but who knows? Go undefeated and win the Big 12 and get in the playoff and see what can happen. But no, it doesn't sound like there's much there to talk about at all. Travis Roeder from the staff. Craig, loved your answer today about getting back to having fun. We sat next to one another in the press box against Tech last year. And I remember at halftime just talking about how bored we were. Let's hope for none of that this fall. Well, thank you, Travis. And that was in regards to the article we had about the biggest, what was it, the storyline?
Was it storyline or successful season?
Oh, yeah. What would constitute a successful season? That was the one that we had today. And mine was basically of like, just are we having fun watching them every week? Mm-hmm. Are we looking forward to the next week's game? Or are we dreading like, God, we got to go to another game? And that's how it felt during that Tech game last year of like, just put us out of our misery. Mm-hmm. Let us go home. This is awful to watch. And just sitting here. And that's what Travis is referring to, because that's when, like, that was one of the low points for sure, getting your head kicked in by Texas Tech. So there was a lot of that last year, like a lot of that, almost every week. And you were like, oh my God, there's 4 weeks left. Like, let's get to the off season. That clearly is not a successful season. So yeah, to me, it's about like, I can't wait to get to the to game week, and I can't wait to see what they do this week. That to me would be successful. So that's what Travis is referring to. And definitely remember that, Travis. Appreciate you chiming in. And yeah, let's hope we don't see much of that this fall.
Aside from the UCF game where they had that epic comeback, the most fun part of the season has been the off season, which is not great. And so really that was the only moment last year that really held any significance. And so, yeah, I agree. It would be nice to see them get back to having fun and just putting a brand of football on the field that I think fans and coaches and players are proud of. Because last year, no one was proud with that.
Their three wins were, a very unimpressive win over Long Island.
Yeah.
Or was that Albany or whatever?
Long Island in the rain.
Luckily see the rain.
Yeah, the Long Island game that we all, whatever. And then you had the epic comeback against UCF that you had no business winning that game. And then you barely beat Cincinnati up in Cincinnati in a game that you very easily could have lost. And those were your three wins. Was an unimpressive win against
the
team.
And those were on the road. Those two you just mentioned were on the road.
Yeah.
So didn't do it in front of your home.
One win at home.
Crowd.
And that was the very beginning of the year. So, being there halfway through the year, home game-wise, it was just, it was not a good time. So, they've definitely got improvement. I mean, you really look back on that, like, those are their three wins last year. And that's why that felt as long as it did. So, hopefully that is much improved. We will see, and starting on Thursday, we will see practices kicked off officially. So here we are, folks. It's been a long wait. Still got a little bit more of a wait, but now we have a whole month of build-up and interviews and news and notes that will be coming out of practices as well. So definitely be tuned into Sikkim365.com for all the latest and the video, audio, everything we can get our hands on from fall practices. We'll have that for you, but Grayson, before we head out here, anything to pass along?
Just be sure to check out Sikkim 365 premium side of things. We're going to have tons of content for fall camp, whether it's insider notes or Jack's views from the Brazos or just, I mean, we're going to have all kinds of content all throughout the coming weeks. And so be sure to check that out on the premium side of things. We'll have all the coverage and keep you in the know about Baylor through fall camp. And then also be sure to check out 365 Sports on YouTube. Monday through Friday.
Yes, Monday through Friday, 3 until 6 on the 365 Sports on YouTube page. But before you go, click on that like and subscribe button here on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page. Would be much appreciated, especially as we start to build that up for the season and a lot more content. Thanks to the folks in the mailbag, Paul and WTT, Useless Kim Degree, Baylor Bear 2022, Doc Crowell, Wyatt Smith, Brent BU Bear, Billy 21, and our own Travis Roeder as well. Appreciate all of y'all for helping us close it out with some questions. And that'll do it. Thanks to Jack McKenzie and Garrett Ross behind the scenes. And for Grayson Grunhafer, I'm Craig Smoke. We'll talk to you next week. This has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.